Blog Talk Radio.
Short time to get to lean in, listen to some really decent music, and some conversation, some poetry, ideas about Freemasonry that are those that usually happen after we've shared a glass of something together in friendship about a topic that is truly an acquired taste about Freemasonry. I mean, it's kind of very interesting that the values that we talk about are valuable to the globe, but we are aware and self-aware enough not to be trying to be preachy about this, to impose our way of thinking, our way of life on anybody else. It's like the folly of authority. You know, you ever stand around and listen to old men brag about their time in service, not in an honorable way, but when we have to tolerate their stories about abusing their authority, you know, cracking somebody on the head or doing something untoward, as if our audience is going to rectify the wrongness of those deeds. They know, unless they are dumbing it down so that it makes it appear all right. No, I'm talking about the opportunity that is collectively rests within the brotherhood, the brotherhood of Freemasonry, the power for good, the power for transparency, and the freedom, the intellectual freedom to explore important questions of life. Aware, though, of the need to control emotion and control ego, to be able to, in the finest sense of the word, to embrace that scientific method, if you will, to examine important questions. And not to say that we shouldn't tune in a football game or a sport because it's something that we enjoy, not that we should ever not go for a walk in the woods because it's healthy and inspiring, or fall into the kind of wonder that somebody like me did many, many years ago when I was a little boy stumbling along the ocean shore on Prince Edward Island, and then realizing many years later that my whole life seems to be the beach is a metaphor for that, for my life. I seem to stumble along, always curious. I can remember that. Always curious with what the ocean or the storm would wash up on the shore, the bits of wood and began to think about the distance traveled and where those things are coming were from, and the people that might have been using or cut down that tree or using that float or that bit of netting or that bit of line. It was when time stopped for me. You know, when you're ending up running up the fields to supper, trying not to be late because you know you didn't want to, they wouldn't hold it too long for you. And it wouldn't be too long before somebody would send out a search party for you. But just enthralled and curious and lost in your investigations. You remember that when you were able to do that? Well, I hope in my heart that when you walk into the lodge, that's the atmosphere that envelops you, where you're given that opportunity to escape to a different part of your being, where you can examine and be pleased with the personalities around you, with their, as you witness them, just as they witness you and I, struggling with the values and the protocols and ethics of our craft, the new boys stumbling along and lurching like the toddlers that they are, and the lovely old boys that are so deaf they talk out loud and don't know that the whole room can hear them. They're one of my favorites. That's the kind of atmosphere where we learn. And always a thoughtful conversation. Always reasons, not some pulp, not a regurgitation of something that somebody else said, but the challenge of reasoning through the viewpoints of other people and reasoning them through for ourselves. We may, in fact, I think, not always come up with the same conclusions, but we may also have evolved to the point where we can stand back, take a step back, and see how other people can achieve the goal in their way. You know, did I mention that there's more roads into Rome than one? I hope you enjoy the show today. I hope it's informative, and if I'm not too tedious here, it'll be entertaining. I want to thank the followers that have been tuning into the show over the years and recently. It is absolutely overwhelming to know that many people are finding this banquet of ideas is satisfying, and I'm pleased. At least I want to believe that this program is where you find authenticity, genuineness, and sincerity coming through. Yeah, it's all I've got, you know. Beyond that, we are doing another deep dive into the art and sciences. And this is, I know it's a blatant segue here. The title of the commentary today is Discovery, the Art and Science of the Arts and Sciences. Sometimes I have those moments of inspiration. Now, we'll kick this off with the Modern Jazz Quartet. Oof, I will. Enjoy. Thank you. Brother, can I freshen that drink? Sit back, relax. I have something special for you here this morning, this afternoon, this evening, wherever you happen to be, all over the world. Huh? This is Discovery, the Art and Science of the Art and Sciences. I offer this to you as a way of reminding myself and anybody who cares to listen in that Freemasonry isn't a club, although some try to make it into what they're familiar with. It's not a club. It's not a service club. It's a brotherhood. It's a brotherhood. It's a lifelong commitment. And I don't like to think that we're any less able or more able than our ancient brethren at making commitment. We live longer in some parts of the world. So commitment, you know, if the life expectancy is in our 40s or 50s, we're living a lot longer than that. I don't ever think that it's necessary to brag about how many years I've been a Freemason. I like to think that in some ways I was a Freemason long before I took an obligation. I like to think that the world around me includes a lot of good people. And I say people knowing that the values have no gender bias. There's no maleness or femaleness to the ideas of to ethics or morality. They are what they are. They're like mathematics. And before we throw our hands in the air running around shrieking about the how this invalidates our Constitution, it does nothing of the sort. Nowhere in any Constitution that I've seen, and I don't claim to be the world expert on this topic, have I ever seen an effort to disrespect or turn away or disavow ideas of any sort. Freemasonry is certainly not an excuse for the abuse of the human condition. More so, it leans more toward that Confucius notion that we can go about our lives day by day without causing inconvenience to another living creature. Without causing inconvenience. This is about being thoughtful and in using the insight around us and the insight of others, learning from it. But off the hop, there's a lot of reasons that is a challenge. And so just because you and I might have conquered our demons temporarily, it's no reason to think that the fellow that's being loudish or ridiculous isn't struggling with his own inner demons. Can you imagine the critic when we hear that? When we hear the critic launching himself at one of us or a topic that he's conjured up from that moment, just think about how menacing that mind is when he lies down and tries to sleep. Oh, do you think that there's a double standard there? Oh, no. That poor fellow doesn't deserve those private thoughts that are eating away at his conscience. He can't even contain them. They leak out into public. Sad. A brotherhood, eh? Scientific discovery blocked by demagoguery or superstition simply waits until someone, somewhere, somewhen makes the discovery, which is plausible. Art is an expression once, unable to wait, but timeless in its expression. Now think about it. The common references here would be, what, Da Vinci or, yeah. Let's say Leonardo da Vinci. A one of a kind, a talent, a mind, the work that is not, it is what it is. A product of that man's life and talents and all that entails. And yet, when we think about science, the discoveries, if we try to block progress with science, it never quite works because eventually someone else, I think of the printing press, you know, it's a nice clean example. Gutenberg and there were all the elements of the printing press had been developed before he was, we give credit that he was the person that invented this, unless you ignore the Chinese that had it 1,000 years earlier. I know, isn't it? So, blocking by demagoguery or superstition, yeah, but wait. We are servants of the craft. When we learn to control our emotions, we think before we speak, to listen, watch, silently. We act with grace that is gentle in the face of insubordination and aggression, that earns a sobriquet, gentle craft. Gentle and thoughtful is not weak or silly, though the loutish mind might like us to believe otherwise. It is a principled life. Is a principled life worth living? It is truly more powerful, is it? Is it truly more powerful than ignorance? Is it only a hypocrite who takes the vows of a Freemason and sets about denying agape, denying true happiness is achievable through our collective behavior toward one another and within our conscience? On the 26th of January, 1911, Richard Strauss' comic opera Der Rosenkavalier debuted in Dresden. The story is old as time, about dishonest assumptions about the nature of women. As a wealthy, middle-aged woman takes a young, timid man for her lover, though she cannot have an intelligent conversation with him, and he has more carnal goals than a mutually rewarding relationship. So flawed, often criticized, but wildly popular from the first performance. It, like Freemasonry, is an allegory, messaging of an artistic persuasion that disarmingly garnishes discretion to explore controversy. Is this why men become distracted and impose their own ego in a special atmosphere, unlike anything they've experienced? Is it because they are overwhelmed that they attempt to withdraw into a conflicted comfort zone? What they do not need is an audience. I'm talking about foolish men. While this is an individual struggle, to permit disruption of the harmony of a lodge would be an obvious innovation. And I know, and we know, that we have given our word never to allow or facilitate that. As you wish. Thank you. son, Roland Kirk. Fabulous. Today, I'm going to share with you the work of Luis de Camões, a Portuguese poet. And this is perhaps considered one of the greatest epic poems written by Portuguese. It's an incredible piece of work. I'll tell you a bit about this story. Who knew? What I'm doing here is still trying after many, many attempts to do this, trying to find the proper translation for this to share with you. And I'm determined that I'll do that. It's called the Lusiads. And it's worth, bear with me, I don't do this very often. You'll hear me at work here. It's worth the wait, what can I tell you? This is a work that's been, there's been just so much done on it. The Lusiads is an epic poem, and it was published in 1572. And the work describes the discovery of a sea route to India by Vasco da Gama. Yeah. That happened in the, 1486? Correct me if I'm wrong here. The action of the poem begins with after an introduction, an invocation, and a dedication to King Sebastian. Da Gama's ships are already underway in the Indian Ocean, sailing up the coast of East Africa. You can imagine that. And the gods of Greco-Roman mythology gather to discuss the fate of the expedition, which is favored by Venus and attacked by Bacchus. And the voyagers spend several days in Melinda on the east coast of Africa, and at the request of the king, Da Gama recounts the entire history of Portugal, from its origins to the inception of their great voyage. And this is in, there's 10 cantos in this? These cantos contain some of the most compelling passages in the poem. When they re-embark, Bacchus tries to arrange the shipwreck of the Portuguese fleet and is prevented by Venus, and Da Gama is able to reach his destination. Can you imagine this great epic journey? Also includes a battle between two gods. Now, on their homeward voyage, the mariners chance upon the island Venus has created for them, and the nymphs reward them for their labors. One of the nymphs sings of the future deeds of the Portuguese, and the entertainment ends with a description of the universe given by Da Gama and Nereide Tethys. And the sailors set sail for home. Can you imagine? Arms are my theme, and those matchless heroes who from Portugal's far west shores by oceans where none had ventured, voyage to Taprobana and beyond, enduring hazards and assaults such as drew on more than human prowess, among far distant peoples to proclaim a new age and win undying fame. Kings likewise of glorious memory who magnified Christ and empire, bringing ruin to the degenerate lands of Africa and Asia, and others who immortal deeds have conquered death's oblivion. These words will go wherever there are men, if art and invention steer my pen. Boast no more about the subtle Greek or the long Odyssey of Trojan Aeneas. Enough of the Oriental conquests of great Alexander or of Trajan, I sing of the famous Portuguese, to whom both Mars and Neptune bowed. Abandon all the ancient muse revered. A loftier code of honor has appeared. And you, nymphs of Targus, who first suckled my infant genius, if ever in my rustic verses I celebrated your companionable rever, return me now a loftier tone, a style both grand and contemporary. Be to me Halcyon. Let Apollo choose your water as the fountain of my muse. Fire me now that mighty cadences, not a goatherd's querulous piping, but the shouts of a battle trumpet. Steering the heart, stealing the continent. Give me a poem worthy of the experts, flights of the heroes, so inspired by Mars to propagate their deeds through space and time. If poetry can rise to the sublime. And then it plunges on.
Thank you.
little Hank Crawford. Unpack a bit more information about symbolism. You know, those little thought bombs that are around us. You and I are part of an order that is really quite good at collecting information and symbols. Really, we excel. You know, if there's a bar higher, well, you know, that's pretty good. Don't mean to compete with the intellectual currency of the world. No, of course not. But we're pretty good at doing that, and have done so for a long, long time, to the point where people suspicious of our motives have looked at these things and made up their own versions. And, you know, human nature without a shared common purpose and values tends to be depressed. Not angry, but depressed. And to cover up that sadness and that anxiety, we often see it come out in thoughtlessness and the anger. Have you ever wondered why somebody is so angry all the time? Nothing to do with you, although you might be a bit of a putz, I don't know. But unwarranted anger and rage masks a deeper state of sadness and depression. It's isolating. But this gives me an opportunity here in the program. And I will confess to you, there's times during Masonic Effects, just like you, I'm part of the audience. And I have to pull myself back to reality that, you know, there's tasks and things we need to accomplish and want to do and goals for the program. But you know, some of this music is just, it galvanizes us, doesn't it? Brings us to a common state of mind. And I guess, you know, in a lot of ways, that's why our ancient brethren were fans. The music is scattered throughout our ceremony. And in some places, and I cite Sweden, not particularly because it's one that I know a little bit about. I'm sure there are others, but, you know, the galas and the history, it just fits together with music. And here, I like to think that we're introducing not Baroque, although if I had my druthers, I would be exposing you to my taste in opera. I know. But if you're listening to Beethoven take you along or Brahms and you think of it, or Puccini or, you know, the great composers and librettists, and they just, it's transcendent. And I'm speaking to those listeners who have experienced frisson. You know, when you're listening to music, and it needs to be a certain volume, and all of a sudden, the hair on your arm stands up. It's an experience unlike anything else, very specific frisson, the French refer to it. Then there's music that just inspires that, ignites that experience. Well, I think that within Masonry, I wish that you experience the context. Freemasonry is a context of exploration of our nature. And we don't necessarily find our nature walking around like Narcissus, so we're looking in the mirror, you know, or only reading things that have a Masonic text. Like, is there no other environment or context around us? Come. Of course there is. Well, what's going on out there? Are you riveted and even Freemasonry does us great service. Stay away from those tar pits. There's politics over there and there's religion over there. Stay away. Come on, you can go there, but, you know, gonna cast you. It turns out to be pretty accurate. Oh, but then you throw your hands in the air again and say, what? If you take that away, what is there? Can you imagine? What is there? Look around. Open your eyes. Aude vidi tace si vivere in pace. If you wish to watch and listen in silence, if you wish to live in peace, don't make this stuff up. Just try to understand it like you. So step with me. Don't leave me hanging out here. Step with me. We've been working through Colin Dyer's amazing piece of work. And grateful for it. Thank you very much for the ideas that he's shared as he describes and gives meaning to some of the things. Not commonplace. And if this seems like we're beating the same old drum over and over again, please, I apologize. That's the last thing I want to do. I think the world that we live in is so inspiring. Masonry, though, requires that interesting blend. It enlightens us. We have this blend of imagination and information, fact, knowledge. What we need now, where I am in Upper Canada, isn't more theory, more business, more finesse and delicacy with the authority. No, certainly not. Authority, you know, command and control, it doesn't work. What we need is wisdom. And you don't get there demanding uniformity. No. No, wisdom is more confident, much more confident. It expects the challenge. It expects the curiosity, the idle curiosity or otherwise creates opportunity. So it expects the audacious to come up and question and doubt. So of course we would all embrace the Socratic method. Ask a question. What are the ethics? What are the important ethics of a Mason? Well, do you really need an audience? That's really your work. That's the contemplative mind at work. Here, you want an example of a contemplative mind? This is a piece on the installed master's apron and the past master's jewel. On the apron of a brother who has been installed in the chair of the lodge, there are placed, instead of rosettes, devices that have come for some reason to be known as levels. I found that amazing. In the great majority of lodges under the English Constitution, there are three working tools allocated to a speculative sense to each of the three craft degrees. We're going to talk about the working tools today. Given a total of 9 in all. This arrangement, obviously a very neat one, only dates from around 1816. I didn't know that, Dale. And was incorporated as part of the revised system of ritual of the three degrees, met as a result of the union of the two former English Grand Lodges at the end of 1813. Prior to this time, there does not seem to have been much common practice, although it is apparent that the former Ancients Grand Lodge used a moral explanation of working tools in the first and second degrees. Those of the first degree were the 24-inch gauge, the square and common gavel or setting maul. Those of the second degree were the plumb, square, and setting maul. There is little variety in these, although the germ is there very early in the second half of the 18th century. It is really quite natural that the square, the great emblem of masonry, should be a tool in both degrees, while the same applies to the common gavel or setting maul, with its special use by the master for calling to order. Although Dr. Anderson's constitutions for the original Grand Lodge have, in the 1738 edition, a reference to the hammer and trowel being the tools requisite for a Freemason, the one to separate and the other to join, there is no reference in any early manuscripts traceable as definitely modern ritual practice to any explanation of working tools as such. There is the standard reference to the square, level, and plumb rule as the movable jewels of the lodge, to the square and compasses in relation to the Bible. It is, however, quite clear, as will appear from quotations later on, that a great deal of speculative thought was directed to the ordinary tools of masonry. In the second edition of his Illustrations of Masonry, published in 1775, William Preston included some notes on the ceremony of consecration, consecrating a new lodge, and the consequent installation of the first master. He indicated that a similar sort of ceremony ought to be observed at subsequent installations. The warrant was delivered over to the first master, after which the Holy Bible, the square and compasses, the Book of Constitutions, the Minute Book, the Haram, the movable jewels, and all the insignia of the different officers are separately presented to him, and the necessary charges suitable to each are properly delivered. The Haram was the name given to the hammer, mallet, or gavel used by the master as a symbol of authority and to maintain order in the lodge. In this edition, published in 1792, certain additional items appear for the first time. The rule and line, the mallet, the trowel, and the chisel. He adds, for the accommodation of those brethren whose distance from the metropolis may deprive them of gaining the necessary instruction in this important rite, we shall here insert a few moral observations on the instruments of Freemasonry, thus presented to the master of a lodge at installation. He then proceeds to give short moral explanations on the rule, line, trowel, plumb, square, compasses, chisel, and mallet in that order. His wording and the appearance of these new instruments in 1792 suggests that this was something new in formal ritual matters, arising toward the end of the 1780s. In a manuscript lecture believed to date from the late 1790s and to come from Lancashire, something very similar appears in circumstances which make it look like an addition to an older lecture, because this contains even more than Preston. It is reproduced here. Oh, we'll get into that the next time. I'll tease you and then leave you. It sounds like this. As the various implements of our profession are emblematical of our conduct in life and are intended to imprint on the memory wise and serious truths, which every Mason ought to well understand and constantly bear in mind, an explanation of them is requisite in this lecture. What does the rule direct? Painful enough? Yeah, I thought so. You see, what we're being taught is that the tools were an allegory of something going on, ideas. What do you think those ideas were that were so powerful, so profound? But these men cited allegorical references and found that they followed this pattern of tools. Oh, I'm sorry to burst the bubble of people that think that we were literally formed by masons that worked in the quarry. We have the capacity for a literal translation, which is absolutely beautiful and amazing. And then we tuck into the more abstract notions of unpacking the meaning, allegory and myth and mystery. The symbols. Now today, our use of language and the way we think is different than the use of language and the thinking of that period. In fact, there's periods in history when we have a very hard time translating any of the writings because the spelling had not been settled. Now think about that. We take these conventions for granted, but that's all we're doing is taking them for granted. So the spelling was inconsistent, even with the same writer through letters and correspondence. And it's hard to track and then to determine meaning from those words. Well, we know that that's an entire field of specialization. Thank you for those people that are continuing to do that work. As I'm stumbling over the Lycidas, I was looking through different translations that had begun in the 17th century and layered and layered and layered. More than one. Oh, it's not that we're talking about right and wrong here, gentlemen. No. Each different, like you and I, each different perspective helps us to understand more fully the object or topic or idea that is at hand. If you're inclined to think that there must be only one version, it must be very lonely in there with that ego challenging for supremacy over the entire knowledge base of mankind. Far from it. Listen to, that's why we're taught to listen and encourage the debate. That's why I love, I wish we, every lodge had wine slaves. It was such a convenient, charged with making sure that you and our mates were just at the edge of tipple so that our tongues were loose, the ideas were inspired, but not so that we became distempered and loud or offensive. Or intoxicated and sick, but just at that, they were charged to make sure we were just at that edge, pouring a little more wine, a little more water, getting the right balance, and then you and I would just dip our cup in and sip away, free from having to, yes, I'm not a big fan of the boys and girls that go around counting drinks or when they're out and they don't have the social grace to know that what to do in a given situation. When somebody is being gracious, you reflect that back. It's like the person that's sitting down to a wonderful meal, or the hosts have obviously taken a great deal of time to prepare. And the person begins to launch into their diet and their dietary restrictions. No need. Shh. Be the gentleman. Do this with grace. Don't bring attention to yourself. I know. Shocking, huh? Well, you think about it. Even this work, Dyer's passing this on, and the ancients and the moderns sat down and worked this out, 1816? Do you think, at a bare minimum, we should pay attention to any of this? Do you? Well, some of us do. Certainly. But I digress here. Here's a little Cannonball Adderley and Nancy Wilson.
When a bee lies sleeping in the palm of your hand, you're bewitched and deep in love, long looks at the land, where you see a sun of sky with a morning hue, and where the days go laughing by as love comes calling on you. Sleep on me, don't wake up.
Of the wall that this banquet, this smorgasbord is wrapping up. It's a groaning board. It's tempting just to linger. Mm-hmm. So find your mates and get a pour in another glass of whatever is at hand that makes you relax. Good cup of tea and a little Corona, a Guinness, a Scotch, a Merlot, huh? Or maybe you're prone to a bit of brandy and chartreuse after this kind of a meal you need a digestive. It's been an absolute pleasure having you join. We're going to talk in the next couple of programs about some of the paradoxes of Freemasonry, conformity and individualism. You know, that notion that we have a unique expression in the world, and what that does to our ego. The way we see the world is quite unique to the mind that it sits behind those eyes. But that undeniable pleasure in the company of other people is quite profound. And yet we respect the people that are longing for their own company, that like the and need an uncomplicated state of affairs. Here at Masonic Effects, we embrace the notion of contemplation, that you need time to enjoy that chapter, that thought, to enjoy your own company. That happiness that comes when you don't, when you realize you don't need another person to reinforce your ego. All that stuff about in codependency and stuff. You're not codependent on Freemasonry. Come on. Relax. Deep breath. Freemasonry is offers these pearls of wisdom, and it's valuable. And so, I guess if you want to deconstruct the whole process, in order for us to find the value, the treasures here, requires work. If these ideas were just handed out, they would have less meaning. That's why in a couple of weeks, you're all going to celebrate my birthday as your own. Because it's special. Not every day. Oh, my goodness. But we find those perfect moments, don't we? Look for them. Look for them in your own life. Look for them on your own day. And they're there. If you haven't been looking for this, it's not to say that you're never going to experience it. If you've never experienced it, you have to look for it. You have to look for the beauty around you. It's there, but it's that choice. Is it? Oh, my goodness. Yes. That depends on you, on the mind, on the intellectual currency. Eh? In the meantime, thank you very much for tuning in today. It's been a pleasure. I'll look forward to being with you again. Commit those acts of random Masonic kindness and scratch your head that we're going to go about doing all of this business without bringing any attention to ourselves. Don't you just want the T-shirt and the bling and the? I remember somebody telling me how we need billboards on the side of the highway to bring in business. Oh my goodness, there's a future topic. The diabolical nature of Freemasonry is that it's about discovery. We need to let that guy, that person, discover us. Well, you can't do that and be harping away at him, can you? You can't. Good try. Here is a little Hank Garland. He says it much better than I do, unless you're in love. Love yourself. Love the world. See you again real soon. Bye. Thank you.